Welcome to The Productivity Show, the Asian Efficiency Podcast dedicated to helping you make the most of your time, attention, energy, and focus. In this episode, Brooks and I talk about how you can plan and execute your perfect week. We talk a lot at Asian Efficiency about achieving your ideal future, and the process of planning your week is one of the things that you can do right now to make significant steps in that direction. In fact, if you've never planned your perfect week before, you may be a lot closer to your ideal future than you realize. In this episode, we'll show you the three steps to planning your perfect week, talk about what types of things you should put on your calendar, and the process to follow when things don't go according to plan so you can get back on track. If you've ever felt overwhelmed by everything you have to do, or you find yourself not wanting to even look at your calendar, then this episode is for you. You can find links to everything that we share in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/156. And now, on with the show. Today we're going to be talking about something that is essential to productivity, and that is time management. But specifically, we're going to be looking at how you can actually plan your perfect week. And with me on today's episode, we've got Brooks Duncan. So you ready to talk about planning your perfect week, Brooks?
I am. Let's get planning.
Awesome. So this whole idea about planning your perfect week, I actually picked this up in a very old, I think it was Mike's on Mike's podcast where Patrick Roan was on. And he talked about using his calendar as his task list. And I don't generally agree with that wholeheartedly, but there's a very important principle there where the things that you actually want to do, you have to make the time in order to do them. And that is a very important part of planning your perfect week. Many of us get stuck in doing the things that we quote unquote have to do. But if you look at that Eisenhower matrix, you've got the things that are important but not urgent. Those are the things that tend to get pushed to the side, while the things that are urgent but not important, a lot of those maybe are things that people are asking you to do via email. Those tend to take up every spare moment of time that you have, especially if you have not indicated beforehand how you're going to spend it. So we're going to look at this today, and really the problem that we're going to analyze here is that we waste a lot more time than we realize, even the most Asian efficient among us. The average American watches over 30 hours of television a week. They spend 2 hours per day or 14 hours per week on social media. We've mentioned before in the podcast that they spend 6.3 hours per weekday or 31.5 hours per week dealing with email. And all of that adds up. It adds up to you not being able to take action on the things that are really important to you.
Yeah, this is something that almost all of us do. In fact, about an hour before recording this podcast, my wife asked me if I was going to do something today. And I said, oh, no, I can't. I don't have time. I'm too busy. And then right after I said it, I realized, no, there's a lot of reasons why I'm not going to do the thing that she asked me about. But honestly, being too busy is not it. I just don't feel like making the time to do it. So it can be a big mindset shift, and it's easy to fall into that pattern. But if there's something we want to do, chances are there's a way we can make it happen.
Yeah, it's a huge mindset shift. And once you make it, it has implications which don't just solve the short-term stuff, but it makes everything long-term a lot easier too, if you can really embrace that new mindset. Most people do not think of their time this way, but there is a very real connection between the amount of time that you spend and the amount of money that you make. So if you were to boil it down, you could say, you know, how much is your time actually worth? But the problem with that breakdown is that you can always get more money, but you cannot get more time. So if you are wasting time now, you are actually never able to reclaim that. And one of my favorite quotes here I put in the show notes is by Benjamin Franklin. He says, "Dost thou lovest life, then do not squander time, for that's the stuff that life is made of."
Yeah. Whenever you read, say, an interview or a biography with somebody really successful, whatever success, you know, means to you, this is something they say all the time, that really time is the thing that they find the most precious. Now, it's easy to say that when you have a lot of money, but when it comes down to it, that's the big thing that everybody struggles with.
Yep, absolutely. So Let's talk about how you can not squander your time by planning your perfect week. And planning is just the beginning part of this. Obviously, you still need to execute on it. But in the people that we've worked with and the customers that we have at Agent Efficiency, the ones who really seem to do well, the ones who seem to be more successful in accomplishing their personal and professional goals, are the ones who will plan their day either the night before or even in the morning when they wake up. They'll sit down, they'll do the weekly review, and they'll think big picture like that. They won't just wake up and let everything happen to them. So the question that a lot of people don't ever even ask themselves is, what does your perfect week look like? And the best example I have of this is this exercise, which I've done with a few different people inside the dojo even, where you break down all of the hours that you have available to you. Okay, so there are 168 hours in the week, and you can break that down into the different segments. We'll do that in just a second. You were going to say something, Brooks?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say this exercise that we're about to do is a great exercise, and it's a great exercise to do anyway. Like it's a great way to organize your time and figure out what you have to do, but it's also a great exercise if you are in that feeling overwhelm, crisis, not necessarily crisis, though it's good for that too, but if you're just feeling like there's too much going on, it can be really useful exercise to sit down and do that exercise so you can help figure it all out. It's almost like a good triaging sort of thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the exact impact that it's had on the people that I've done this with, is you go from feeling stressed out and overwhelmed to, oh my gosh, I've got way more time than I realize, and I can totally do this. And just that sense of control, that's the thing that's missing for a lot of people. So just as an example, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that's 168 hours. And there are certain things that you absolutely have to put in here. And I would say that the order of the things that you put in here matters, but I'll just use the example that I've got in front of me here. So let's say that you need to, like me personally, I've mentioned that sleep is really important to me because I've been diagnosed with epilepsy. And one of the things that could trigger a seizure is not getting enough sleep or getting poor sleep. So I'm pretty militant about my sleep. I try to get a full 8 hours every single night. So if I got 8 hours of sleep every single night for 7 nights, that's 56 hours. So you're just going to start chipping away at that 168 hour total. So we've got 168 minus 56 means you got 112 hours left. Let's say that you work a full-time job. Okay, so that's 40 hours. And the average commute, I read somewhere, is something like a half an hour each way. I rounded that up. So let's just say that it's almost an hour each way. Let's say the 4 hours a week you spend commuting. And then you've got the play or leisure. So these are things that you want to do, your hobbies. Maybe you could substitute some of this for like family time if you wanted to. But let's just say we want to spend quite a bit of time doing these things. So let's say that we've got 15 hours devoted to play and leisure. All right, let's say we want to go to the gym. For me personally, I try to work out 6 days a week. So let's say an hour every single day, which I don't always work out for a whole hour, but let's just say an hour every day. So that's 6 hours. Maybe you've got some cleaning or maintenance you've got to do at your place, and that's going to take quite a bit of time. Let's say that's 15 hours. And let's say that you're involved, like I am, with your church or some service organization. You're doing community service, whatever it is, for 5 hours a week, which is a lot. Okay, so all of these estimates are high estimates. That's really the point that I want to make. And there's going to be some things that aren't in here, for example, like some of your meals and stuff like that. But the point here is that if you add all of these things up, you've got 56 hours for sleeping, 40 hours working, 4 hours commuting, 15 hours play leisure, 6 hours for the exercise, 15 hours for cleaning and maintenance, service and church, 5 hours. Now, if I did my math right, and I didn't double check this, so maybe you can do a quick Alfred calculation or something for me, Brooks. Sure. But I've got 141 hours on my sheet here. And that means that we've got still 27 hours at our disposal. So if you wanted to start that side business, write that book, that side hustle, whatever, or even if you just wanted a little bit more margin to do the things that are important to you, maybe you don't get to the gym every day, but you want to, okay? If you were to actually break this down and look at all of the hours that are available to you, you've got more than you realize. It's just that we plug those things in, doing things that we don't necessarily prioritize, We don't sit down in front of the TV and consciously decide this is the absolute best use of my time right now. I'm going to watch TV. And if you were to make that decision, that's completely fine. But we don't make that decision. We settle for that any good or any benefit approach. And it helps us zone out a little bit. Doesn't really recharge our batteries, but we settle for that any benefit approach. And then we complain that we don't have time to do those things that are really important to us.
Yeah, I think people are shocked when they do this exercise. You've taken people through it before, Mike, so maybe you can speak to that. But I think people are shocked. Sometimes it can almost be depressing, like, where did all my time go? But I think you shouldn't approach it from the depression or sad mindset when you do this exercise. You should approach it from the opportunity mindset. You know, all of a sudden, I have all this time that I didn't realize that I had. Now you can at least make some choices on what you're going to do for it. Are people usually surprised when you take them through this?
Yeah, and I get where you're coming from, where you could view this negatively and say, oh man, I've really sucked at how I've managed my time. But most of the people that I've done this with, they feel encouraged because often you get in this situation and you feel like there's just no escape. I've got too much to do. And then when you can shine light on the fact that really it's not having too much to do, it's a matter of prioritization and it's an execution issue, then that gives them hope that yes, I can actually fix this. And I think that's really important that you view this not through the negative lens, but the positive lens. Like if you recognize that the problem is there, that gives you the opportunity to fix it.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk about how you can actually plan your perfect week. So we kind of walk through, you know, the things that are important to you, identifying all of those, identifying if you were to actually get these on your calendar, like what order would you like to do these things in? That's going to be important. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But now we're going to talk about the execution part of this, how you actually get this on your calendar and execute your perfect week. And one of the things I alluded to earlier was the Eisenhower box. And there's a quote here by Dwight Eisenhower who says that plans are worthless, but planning is everything. And that basically means that you can make this plan. It may not go exactly to plan, but the fact that you made the plan and you went through and you thought through all this stuff, that's the thing that's valuable.
I think you can actually assume that things are going to come up. It's not going to work out exactly the number of hours that you've mapped out. You just have to assume that it's not going to work out that way. But having structure around it is going to help.
Yep, absolutely. And the first thing that you have to do if you're going to plan your perfect week is that you have to figure out how you are currently spending your time. There's sometimes quite a big discrepancy between what people think they are spending their time on and what they are actually spending their time on. Most people, if you were to ask them how much time they spend in email every day, they probably don't think that they spend 6.3 hours every day. But the fact is that they do. And when you use a time tracker, for example, then there's no getting around it. The numbers are right in front of you.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Internally, we talked about different types of tools that are important for productivity. And one we were kind of on the bubble on was Time Tracker. And you were pretty passionate that, yeah, that is an important tool. And it's an important for stuff like this, especially when one is having problems with their productivity and they want to solve it. The Time Tracker is one of the most useful things you can do to figure out what the heck's going on.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of different time trackers out there. The important distinction for me in what works and what doesn't is that the time tracker that works for me is one called Timing. And we've actually got a discount for this inside of the dojo. So if you're a dojo member and you're listening to this, like some of the people who are actually live for this impromptu recording, you can actually get a discount on this. But this is something that runs in the background and it takes a little bit of tweaking. You can identify that when I'm in this app, I am actually being productive as opposed to unproductive. So for example, if your job is customer service or you manage social media, you know, by default, Timing may say that the time you spend on twitter.com or in Tweetbot, that's actually unproductive time, but you may say that that actually is productive time because it's part of my job. So you can tweak that, but what it will do is it will run in the background and then it will give you the report. So you don't have to go in there and say, okay, I'm going to start working on this thing right now. hit the button and then the timer starts going, which is what a lot of time trackers like Toggle, for example, or Harvest, that's the approach that those type of apps take.
Yeah, I think the one that runs in the background and calculates it is a little more valuable, because we might have the tendency, if we have to intentionally track the time, which is a useful thing too, don't get me wrong, but if you have the option for one that will do it for you, that's the one that gives you the real answer, not the one that you're just starting when you're going to be doing something productive.
The issue that I've always had with those where you have to manually start them is that I'll sit down, I'll start working, and then I'll remember, oh, I should have started my time tracker. And at that point, like, am I going to go back and make up a number? Because as soon as I start going back and making up numbers, it's really easy for me not to trust the statistics that I'm going to get. But if that works for you, I mean, there are good tools out there. Timing, I should mention, by the way, that is a Mac app. I do not know of a good PC timing app that tracks everything in the background. Maybe one of our Dojo members has a recommendation, but this is important because this is going to provide your baseline. And then once you have your baseline, then you know what's realistic. Okay, so you can identify your perfect week. And if you wanted to spend 40 hours per week working, but right now you're doing 70, you're not going to be able to next week only spend 40 hours. Somebody mentions rescue time. That is a great one. That's like in the Mac, it's like a menu bar icon and it kind of runs in the background. Timing seems to be a little bit more accurate and it gets into like the different applications and things that you would use as well. Rescue Time I have used. I know that there's a free version and there's a paid version, but it's also a web service. I don't know. My experience, I prefer the native apps to the general web services that, hey, look, we've got an application for your platform. What do you think, Brooks?
Yeah, I think the nice thing about Rescue Time is it is cross-platform. So if me being a Mac user myself, I would probably go with Timing. But if you are a PC user, Rescue Time can be a pretty good option.
True. Yeah, I have used that in the past as well. All right. So number one, like I said, figure out how you're currently spending your time. That's going to be the baseline. That's going to give you an indication of what is realistic. And then from there, you can make small changes. Number two is to tell your time where to go. And this is a concept I actually stole from budgeting. So if you're familiar with Dave Ramsey, he's got this every dollar has a job mantra where essentially it's a zero-based budget. That's not just a Dave Ramsey thing, but you when it comes to budgeting, the premise is that all the money that comes in, you tell it where to go. And that's important because if you don't set aside at the very beginning, I'm going to put this much into the kids' college fund or this much into retirement or this much into an investment, then what happens is that by the time you pay all of your bills and you've done everything else, you don't have that money left over. And the same concept applies with your time. You need to have a zero-based budget in terms of your time. And that doesn't mean that you're working all the time, which is, I think, the thing that most people think of when I tell them I plan out every hour of every day. They're like, oh my gosh, I wouldn't want to do what you do. And I'm like, you have no idea what I do. My life is awesome. Because I put things on there that are fun. Like the other day, I actually scheduled on my calendar time to go to the pool with my kids because they got swimming lessons and then they have like an open swim afterwards. So actually, I don't think I told you guys this, but 2 days ago during our daily huddle, I did that from the pool.
Nice.
And then afterwards, I went and jumped in the pool, played basketball with my kids. Like that's the kind of thing that I put on my calendar because those are the things that are really important to me. And then all of the work stuff, all of the other extra stuff, that's gonna go around that.
You didn't need to tell us because your wife posted the pictures on Instagram, so I saw. No worries. but I'm glad you brought up the zero-based budgeting example because it's the same thing when you're budgeting your money. You do want to, if you can, obviously it depends on a lot of things, but you want to at least try and budget some money for the fun stuff, you know, the stuff that makes life worth living. And it's the same with time. I do the same thing as well. We budget, quote unquote, time doing stuff with our kids. And Mike in the dojo said the same thing just in the Slack channel. He said he for some time has been scheduling his free time, and it actually made him realize that he has a ton of time available for him. And once you do that, it's like money. We always think, oh, we don't have enough money to save, but when you budget that money first and you quote unquote pay yourself first, you find out you actually do. Time is exactly the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. I saw that comment too. For those of you who are listening and wondering what we're talking about, we actually record the episodes live in front of the dojo audience. So they're actually contributing via the private Slack team, which you've probably heard about in the outros for the podcast. But this is really fun. And I completely agree that, like, free time specifically, that's if that's something that's important to you, that's something that you should put on your calendar. And when you do that, then you've got that budget, you know, that account essentially, where when an opportunity arises or you want to go do some particular thing, then you've got that account that you can look at and you can say, oh yeah, I've got, you know, 5 hours of free time this week. And so, yeah, I can make sure that I go do that thing. You know, maybe it's somebody who wants to get together for coffee or something. And if you've got that free time available, then you can say, oh yeah, I can squeeze that in. But you got to know that before you just send out the scheduler link or, you know, agree to meet somebody at 8 o'clock on Tuesday morning and then realize that, oh yeah, I was supposed to be here or I needed to do this thing because I had a deadline coming up. So that's really important.
Yeah. Cause one thing you hear about sometimes with concepts like this is people will say, oh, I just couldn't do this. It's just too constraining to me to plan out everything. And for me, I understand where that is coming from. But for me, you can, by doing it this way and putting that unplanned, that fun time, free time on your plan, it's almost like the best of both worlds. You can plan for the unplanned time, if that makes any sense. Just get a block of that where you can, but it also makes sure that you're getting your important stuff done as well.
Yeah, exactly. And Katie mentions that. Unplanned time. It's really important. I can't overemphasize the importance of this principle that whatever you need, whatever is of priority to you, that's the thing that you need to schedule. So if it's unplanned time, because you won't slow down and take a break unless you have a block on your calendar that says slow down, take a break, create that on your calendar where it tells you slow down, take a break. And that is completely fine. But it kind of gets into the next thing that we're going to talk about. So before we get there, the third tip, we've kind of alluded to it. Once you've figured out how you're currently spending your time, number two, you've told it where to go. Then number three, you need to write it down on your calendar, because if it isn't in writing, it doesn't exist. And this is the principle I mentioned at the very beginning that I kind of picked up from Patrick Roan back in the day, is that everything that you need to do needs to take place within the context of time. So you can have a context from GTD, for example, the person, place, or thing or tool that you need in order to get the thing done, but you also need time in order for those things to get done. So if something is really important and really needs to get done on a specific day, then I would argue you need to put it on your calendar.
Yeah. And a good sign that you need to, not you specifically, but one needs to start doing this is if you're in kind of regular meetings, or maybe you're doing your weekly review or something like that, and you're in a meeting and you say, yep, we need to do X, Y, and Z. And everyone says, yep, we need to do that. And then the next meeting next week or next month or whatever, you're reviewing it and you're doing your weekly review and you see, yep, I needed to do X, Y, and Z, but I only did X. Well, that's a good sign that you probably needed to put Y and Z, as you say, in a block on your calendar, because it obviously didn't get done.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't matter if it's digital or physical. You just need to write it down somewhere. So for the digital people, we've actually got another coupon code inside of the dojo for BusyCal, which is kind of our recommended calendar app for Mac. But I've actually gotten into using a physical calendar recently. I've mentioned this on previous podcasts, but I actually have, it's called a self journal. We'll put the link in the show notes, but it's a Moleskine type journal that follows the 12-week year principle roughly. So you identify your three goals for the quarter. You've got pages where you can track how you're doing weekly in terms of executing on your habits. And then you've got a page or two pages actually for every day. And on the left-hand side, there is from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. And I always, the night before, I will go through and I will put down on that paper-based calendar what I'm going to be doing the next day. And I don't know, even though I am definitely a digital guy, I love my Mac. I love figuring out all the different hacks. I love testing all the new apps. For some reason, this paper-based journal and paper-based calendar, this really has clicked for me.
Oh, that's cool. I don't personally do that. I do it digitally. Does the 12-week year, do you know, do they make a calendar? That seems like a really missed opportunity for them if they don't.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I haven't done any research on it, so I don't know if they do or not. I know that Asian Efficiency is partnered with the New Year calendar, and that's sort of along the lines of the 12-week year, but I don't know that there's anything specific from the 12-week year company in terms of this is how you do it. In the book, they propose a framework, and I know that there's like workbooks that go along with it as well, but it kind of seems to me, based on reading it, that they kind of leave it up to you. They give you the flexibility to adapt it to however you want to execute on it. But the self-journal, this the way that they've implemented it, just really clicks for me.
That's cool.
All right. So real quickly, how to plan your perfect week. Number one, figure out how you're currently spending your time. Number two, tell your time where to go. Number three, write it down on your calendar. Now, what should you put on your calendar? We've talked a little bit about this, but the principle here that is worth calling out again right now, just to make sure that it sticks for everybody, is that the most important things to you should go on your calendar first. And a great story to illustrate this is the Stephen Covey story of the big rocks. Are you familiar with this story, Brooks?
I am.
Okay. Well, for people who aren't familiar with the story, I know we've told it a lot at Asian Efficiency, but the short version is that there was a professor who was teaching this class, and he had a 1 gallon jar, and in the front of the class, he took out the jar and he put several big rocks in the jar, and he asked the class, "Is the jar full?" They all said yes, and he says, "Oh, really?" So he takes out a bunch of small pebbles and he dumps them in the jar, and the pebbles fall down into the spaces between the rocks. And he says, "Is the jar full?" And the class now is becoming—they've caught on, so they say no. And he says, "Good." So then he takes some sand and he dumps it in. Is the jar full? No. And then he takes some water and he dumps it in. So now the jar is completely full. And he says, "What's the point of all this?" And somebody says, "There's always more time that you can squeeze out of your day." And while that is true, and we've kind of talked about that with the 168 hours exercise, the real point is that if you don't put the big rocks in first, they're not going to get in there at all. And so the question for everybody is, what are your big rocks?
Yeah, I was at a couple months ago, I was at speaking at the National Association of Professional Organizers conference. And one of the speakers, her name's Mirdu Parikh. We should have her on the podcast someday, actually, because she's really smart. But actually, she did that demonstration in her talk, which I guess means she brought all these rocks and sand in her suitcase to Pittsburgh. But yeah, it's very effective when you see it live, actually.
Yeah. And the great thing about this is that you get to decide what your big rocks are. So we mentioned when we walked through the 168 hours exercise a little bit earlier, I mentioned that like the big rock for me is getting enough sleep every single night. Like that is non-negotiable. So that's my big rock. But your first big rock may be something completely different, and that's completely fine. So we've got a couple of suggestions here for big rocks, which would apply to most of our productivity audience. The first one is focus time. So this is just time where you can do focused, deep work. Okay, so we talk a lot about deep work. We've got several episodes devoted specifically to that topic. There's the different strategies. And this is the thing that kind of gets you from the journalistic approach where you are just doing it wherever you can to the rhythmic approach where you have a regular and a normal cadence. What helps that be regular and normal is the fact that this actually gets prioritized on your calendar. So if you are having trouble finding any space in your life right now to do deep work, the best thing you can do is to block off like a 2-hour block somewhere on your calendar for the next week and make sure that during that time you have the ability to do that deep work, and then just start there. Because once you do it for that small period of time, It kind of becomes addicting, and you look for other pockets of time throughout your calendar. And even if you work in a corporate environment where it's really, really hard to implement this, this will work to some degree. Maybe you're not going to be able to do like 4 hours. Maybe it's only 1 hour, but this is really important to get this on your calendar.
Yeah. A lot of times when people hear that sort of advice, that because in a lot of the books, I think the 12-week yearbook, it even does say 4 hours, like you said, people get instantly turned off. They say, oh, I could never do that. But it doesn't, don't get hung up on the amount of time that some book says or whatever. Whatever you're able to do, and it's usually more than you think, the point is just try and carve out a little bit of that focus time and go hide somewhere and do what you need to do.
Yeah. Now, I've told my story about how I wrote my book. And then when we were doing the Focus webinar, you told me your story. You want to explain to people maybe who haven't heard how you actually started Document Snap? Because I think that that kind of applies to this discussion on focus time.
Sure. Yeah. So before joining the Asian Efficiency team, the way I met Tan is, for those who don't know, is I have another website about helping people go paperless called Document Snap. And I started that while I was working a corporate job in downtown Vancouver. And so I had a full-time job, like I said, and it was quite stressful. So I was usually drained at the end of the day, and I had young children as well. So I didn't have a lot of time to work on this when I outside of my job. So what I started doing is I thought, okay, when is the best time to be able to do that? And for me, it was early in the morning before my work and before, you know, the rest of the family got up, the kids got up and stuff like that. So what I decided to do to avoid distractions is I would leave, instead of heading downtown at the normal time, I went downtown at like 6:30 in the morning, and I would hang out in the lobby of a hotel downtown or maybe go to a Starbucks or something like that. And that would be my focus time until, you know, 5 minutes before I needed to be at work, I'd slam the laptop shut and walk across the street to my office. And so I did that pretty much every day for a long time. And that's basically how I got the education and did the work and built the whole site that way around my corporate job and family.
I think you said when you in the version that you gave me that your MacBook Pro was about 100 pounds.
Yeah, pretty much. It was one of those old 15-inch ones that were so heavy.
Yeah, but the reason I like that story is that it doesn't take a whole lot of time. Like you were saying, it was just an hour a day before your quote-unquote day job started.
Yep.
If that's all you've got for your focus time, that's fine. Like just start with where you are, what you have, and go from there.
Absolutely.
Second big rock is planning. So this is important if you are, especially if you're in some management level or C-level position. Like if you have any say in the direction of your company or your project, this is really, really important because the time that you take to just plan, that can make all the execution much, much, much easier. So Tan's talked about on this podcast that every Thursday afternoon, he does his backlog grooming and he takes that time. He's not on HipChat. So the team, I mean, we could get a hold of him if we really wanted to, but generally like he's disconnected, quote unquote, and he is just planning the next sprint that we're going to be doing. He's to make sure that all of the issues are in there, all the details are there. And that means that when we have our sprint meeting, it goes much quicker. And if everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to do, that means that we can get it done a lot more efficiently.
Yeah. And the nice thing about that too is his planning time is a good example of setting and communicating boundaries. So like you said, if we need to, we can get a hold of him, but it's understood. Everybody knows that Thursday afternoons, he's going to be off doing that. So it's just that expectation has been set. And so everything, you know, everyone's used to it. And so it doesn't have a lot of impact on anyone else because it's just an expected thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. And it very closely related to this is the next type of big rock, which is thinking time. So planning and thinking, there's a little bit of a distinction there where planning, you essentially kind of know what you need to do, but the thinking time is more just open-ended, freestyle. And this is something that Tan actually presented in one of our team trainings. Actually, I think it was this week. on the importance of this thinking time, because if you never take the time to disconnect from the day-to-day stuff that you're doing, you can very easily miss the forest through the trees. Like you can miss out on the opportunities that are staring you in the face because you just haven't looked up to notice them. You have to get a little bit different perspective. And when you just give your brain time to think about things without having a specific outcome, like I need to get this thing done, you might be surprised with the quality of the ideas that you get from that time.
And not only that, but in his training was a great example of this. And hopefully we can do a podcast on, specifically on this topic someday, because also it's a great example of if you carve out time to think on a certain problem or a certain topic, a lot of times what you start and think the thing that you're thinking about, for lack of a better word, ends up being something totally different because you start digging into it. You have that time and freedom to really start playing around with it in your mind and sketching things out. And you might find that what you think is a problem is a completely different problem by the end of it. And it's more important to solve that one. And you can't know that unless you take the time to really dive into stuff.
Mm, yeah, really good point. It helps kind of clarify and make sure that what you're working on is accurate. You know, you're hitting the mark. Definitely a good distinction there. Next one is family time. So this is important for me because we are definitely a frantic family, as Patrick Lencioni would put it. And we need to make sure that we prioritize and put time on the calendar to spend time together. So actually we did that even today. So it's Friday as we record this. When I get done recording, I have on my calendar, we are going to go out for pizza and then we are going to go home and have a Mario Kart tournament.
Nice.
So that actually appears on our calendar. And that's the kind of thing, I think this is a great example of the types of things that people say, oh, I wish I could do that. Well, you can, you just have to get it on your calendar. And then once it's on your calendar, that helps you choose that thing over sitting there and zoning out and watching Game of Thrones or whatever TV show, you know, you happen to be invested in. And then afterwards you say, well, that was cool, but I missed out on, you know, X, Y, and Z. So I think this is definitely, if you have a family, this is definitely something that you should implement.
Yep, for sure. We do something similar, and it's, I don't want to say it's not easy because it is easy, but it's something that life can definitely take you, like life can definitely start interfering if you don't consciously do it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Next one here is side projects. So if you have an idea to write a book or launch a business or some sort of side hustle, side project, then you should carve out the time for that. So your example was great, Brooks, where you were setting aside time to work on Document Snap before you went to your corporate job. My situation was very similar. And I think that there's a high number of people in the Asian efficiency community who they've got ideas. There's a lot of really, really smart people in the dojo. There's a lot of people who have a lot of great ideas, lots of things that they want to do. And a lot of times they join the dojo because they need some people to help hold them accountable to reaching those goals. And in fact, we've got a module coming up by Patrick McGinnis on 10% entrepreneurship, which is going to speak directly to this topic. But the side projects here, I think that this is something that everybody should consider because it doesn't have to be something that you start, for example, a side business that you hope is going to someday become your full-time occupation. That doesn't have to be the case. If all you did was start this blog, for example, as an outlet to write about something, then that's completely fine. In fact, there's a guy in the dojo, Roger Bussell. He sent me a link to a site that he started where he's got he posts his poetry, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes so that people can check this out. But I think this is great. I think this is awesome. This is the perfect example of this. Like if Roger was setting aside time on his calendar to execute a side project, that would be ideal, but he's following through on it anyway, so he probably is.
Yeah, side project doesn't have to be a side business for sure. And in fact, some people say the easiest way to start hating your hobby is to start doing it for money. So yeah, nothing wrong with the side project that is just a passion project for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one here is personal development. So a lot of people know that they should read more. They should go through those courses that they signed up for. They should use their lynda.com membership and actually log in and go through some of that stuff. I'm really thankful that at Agent Efficiency, we actually have a training board where we track all that sort of stuff to help it stick. but if you are having trouble finding time for personal development, then put that on your calendar. And it could be something like, especially if you wanted to read more, the thing that I've found helpful is reading right before I go to bed. So maybe put like the hour before you're going to go to bed. Maybe that's your personal development time or your reading time. Put that on your calendar.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. I was feeling that I wasn't feeling, it was a fact that I wasn't reading enough. And so that's exactly what I did. And for me, it's the morning. It was after I got up. But now every single day I read for a certain amount of time, and for exactly that reason, because it was something I felt was a problem. So the only way I could think of to solve it is to, like we said, put it on the calendar.
Yep. And the last one here, I kind of alluded to with family time, the example I gave with the pizza/Mario Kart tournament, I kind of double dips here, but the last one is fun. So if there is something that you want to do as recreation or fun, then put that on your calendar. And there's a book actually devoted to this topic, which is on my list, but I have not read it yet, called Play. And it basically talks about the importance of play, especially for busy professionals, because the fact that you set aside time to do those things that are fun or disconnect and just play, that actually makes you more creative and more effective when it comes time to actually do your work. So that's something that should appear on your calendar as well.
Yep. My kids are having a lot of fun lately, killing me in Rocket League on the Xbox. So if they're smart, or if I'm smart, I'll start scheduling it more so I can get better.
There you go. All right. And then regardless of what your big rocks are, those are some examples, but maybe you've got some that we didn't list. That's completely fine. But the best practices when it comes to actually putting these on your calendar, a couple things to keep in mind, that you should schedule them for at least 30-minute increments. And I would say preferably 1 hour or more. If you do less than an hour, it tends to not, in my experience anyways, when I plan out my day and I have a block that's less than an hour, I find it very easily could be eliminated because the thing before that maybe went a little bit longer than I anticipated. And then I've no longer got the time to do that thing. But if I use these 1 hour blocks at least to schedule, what I often find is that there's things that will get done a little bit quicker. And so that means that I can just move everything up a little bit. Or at that point, if I wanted to disconnect, take a little bit of a break, I can do that as well. So when you're scheduling these things on your calendar, make sure that you do it in at least 30-minute increments and that the blocks are at least an hour, hour or more.
Yeah. But of course, you know, do what you can. You know, you got to start somewhere. So do what you can and hopefully you can improve it from there.
Yep, absolutely. And then the other thing that I would recommend is that you actually put on your calendar, if you can, some buffer blocks. And these are basically just blocks that allow you a little bit of margin if everything doesn't go exactly according to plan. I have buffer blocks at the beginning and at the end of my day, usually, where if I wanted to crank through email, that's the time that I would do it. If I need to wrap up a project, that's when I would do it. If something's taking a little bit longer than I thought, then that gives me the space for that to happen. You know, when things don't go according to plan, that's where the buffer blocks are really valuable. Speaking of which, that's the next section on this outline of what to do when things don't go according to plan. Because you could plan your perfect week, but chances are it's not going to go exactly like you pictured it. But that doesn't mean that it can't be a net perfect week, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So there are going to be things that are going to be out of the ordinary that you didn't anticipate, but that doesn't mean it has to throw off your perfect week. All right. So there's 5 steps here on what you should do when things don't go according to plan or when an emergency crops up. Number one, don't freak out. And I have trouble with this one sometimes, the high fact finder in me, but because if something comes, if an emergency crops up, then the high fact finder in me says, this is completely unfair. Nobody told me about this. And it's very easy to get emotional and upset at that point. But that doesn't help you deal with the situation effectively. So this is really important that you, when something happens, acknowledge that it's happening, and then you can figure out the next couple steps, like how to actually resolve this. But number one, make sure that that fight or flight response, that emotional response, do everything in your power to make sure that that does not get triggered.
Yeah, because freaking out about something can really derail. A lot of times when something doesn't go right and we freak out about it, a lot of times our freak out has more damage than what the actual disruption was. So a lot of times if we just, you know, take it a bit more mindfully, I suppose, and just roll with it, chances are whatever the disruption was is not going to be earth shattering.
Yeah, really good point. Absolutely. Number two is to leave a marker. And the mental picture that I have of this for those who play golf is that when your ball is on the green, for example, you will put down a ball marker, then you'll pick up your ball, then you'll analyze the putt that's coming up. But if you don't put down that marker right behind where your ball is, then there is absolutely no way you're going to get that ball back in the exact same spot. It's impossible. Same thing when it comes to your work. If you're in the middle of something and something happens that you have to go deal with, make sure that you leave a marker, type yourself a note, write something on a sticky note that shows exactly where you were, because that's going to make it easier to come back and pick up later.
Yeah, I do this all the time. I'll, you know, maybe just throw something in OmniFocus or, like you said, jot something down. Sometimes I read this productivity advice somewhere. I wish I could give credit because I cannot remember where I read it. But something someone said, which is actually pretty effective, is if you do get disrupted and you have to go change to some other task, even just saying to yourself, I need to do X before you change, even that verbalization can really help.
Yeah, that's a really good distinction. The when you say something, it does something to you know, your brain processes it differently when it hears it coming out of your mouth as opposed to just thinking it. It's like it can trust it more. There's more validity there for some reason. But yeah, so then the third one here is to resolve the issue, and this is a lot easier if you've done number one and number two. If you try to resolve the issue and you're emotional and you didn't leave a marker, what's going to happen is you're going to be stressed out and you're going to be thinking about the thing that you should be doing instead, which is obviously going to make it much more difficult to resolve the issue effectively.
Yeah. And even if you can't completely resolve whatever the new issue is, at least get it to a point where you know what needs to be done, and maybe the disruption is not as important as what you were doing. So then it's almost like the reverse. You leave a marker for the disruption and go back to your original task. So you need to decide which one is more important, but the key is making sure that there aren't those open loops and you have everything that needs to be done captured so that you can take the appropriate action.
Yeah, those open loops are killer.
Yeah.
So do whatever you can to make sure that those open loops are resolved. And then you can focus on fixing the issue. And then number four is to go back and resume your work. Now, this is pretty simple and straightforward, assuming that you've left a marker. Even if you haven't left a marker, I mean, when it comes time to resume your work, you know what you need to do. It's probably going to take you longer to figure out exactly where you were when you left off. But I don't think there's a whole lot of discussion that needs to be done with this one. Then the fifth step, this is the one that I think is really, really important. Let me just back up a little bit. Chances are when you first start dealing with emergencies and you're planning your perfect week, you will not follow this 5-point plan perfectly. I know that I did not do that initially. But that's where number five comes in, because you need to reflect on the process. Look at each one of those emergencies, each one of those things that didn't go according to your plan. If you write down what happened, especially if you're leaving a marker and those types of things, you have a record that you can go back and you can reference. But if you take the time to reflect on your week and you look at all of those things that happened, you can identify the opportunities for improvement. So you might ask yourself, you know, what could you have done better in handling this situation? And the other thing that's really important here, I think, is that You can identify any warning signs that maybe you could have used to predict when this thing was going to happen. Because a lot of these emergencies, they're just the end result of things that have been put in motion. And if we are aware of them, then maybe we can intervene before it's an actual emergency.
Yeah. And this takes some honesty with yourself as well, because sometimes the cause of the disruption, or the fact that it became a disruption, even if it came from someone else, the fact that it became a disruption, sometimes that is on us. So you want to be honest with yourself and think to yourself, okay, how can I avoid this in the future? Is there different relationship dynamics I need to create? Is there more boundaries I need to set up? There's all sorts of things that, you know, we can't control what other people can do, but we can control what we do and our reactions. So it takes some self-honesty there.
Exactly. That's a really important point. I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to say this nicely, but the people who tend to be more successful personally and professionally, they're the ones who take responsibility for their own situation. And so there are going to be things that happen to you that are not your fault. There's nothing that you can do about them. But there are things that you can do to make your situation better, or to fix that thing when it does happen. And the people who recognize that, instead of focusing on the fact that this negative thing happened and, oh, this isn't fair, but the ones who look at, oh, if I did this, then that's going to make the situation better for me right now. And if I do that, maybe I won't have to deal with this situation in the future. That's a really important distinction. And what happens when you look at a situation that way is you go from being a victim, you go from being somebody who is just completely helpless because this person is doing this thing regardless of what I do, there's nothing I can do about this, to being in control. Because you can't control what happens to you, but you can control what you do with what happens to you. It kind of comes back to your attitude or your perspective. But if you have the right attitude or perspective and you're looking at how you can make this situation better, that whole mindset is going to translate into success in the long run.
Right. And if they're truly, and you know, we're specifically talking about dealing with your calendar here and your perfect week. So let's be honest there. Let's be specific there. But if there is something that happens to you and there really was nothing that you can do, at least you can look at, okay, is there something that I can do to avoid it from happening next time and not be in this situation? So just analyzing it, which is better, you know, most people don't even go that far. You can get a lot of value from analyzing things.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for bringing us back on task. okay, last thing I've got here is another quote by Benjamin Franklin. We started with a quote by Benjamin Franklin. We'll end with a quote by Benjamin Franklin. He says that those who fail to plan to fail. And that is definitely true when it comes to your perfect week. Do not leave your week to chance. Do not leave it to the whims of other people. Don't set yourself up for failure. Do something. Start planning your perfect week. Even if it doesn't go exactly according to plan, the net result is going to be much better off than if you just flew by the seat of your pants.
Yep. Always listen to Ben. That's the lesson from this episode.
Yep, absolutely. We mentioned the dojo a couple times in this episode. The dojo is our online productivity community, and one of the big benefits of joining a community like the dojo is that you have lots of other like-minded achievers who can help hold you accountable when it comes to reaching your goals and living out your perfect week. In fact, many of our dojo members share their goals on the private forum, where there's a whole thread devoted specifically to accountability. So if you need a little assistance living out your perfect week, then the dojo is a great place to get the support that you need. Now, access to the dojo is limited and it usually costs $29 a month. But if you go to theproductivityshow.com/dojo, you can try it out and not only get access to the community, but also the entire private video training library for only $1 for your first month. That's right, you get access to everything that the dojo has to offer for just $1 for your first month. After that, it's $29 a month, and if you decide it's not for you, then you can cancel at any time. With membership to the dojo, you also get exclusive software discounts on some of our favorite productivity apps, like BusyCal and Timing, which we mentioned in this episode. So if you want to join a community that can help you not just talk about, but take action on and achieve your goals, check out the dojo today by going to theproductivityshow.com/dojo. Again, that URL is theproductivityshow.com/dojo. You can find links to everything that we discussed today in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/156. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.